Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's October the 27th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, trade talks between the U.S. and South Korea have broken down. Bunge North America has settled a multi-million dollar pollution lawsuit, and the International Grains Council has cut its estimate of world corn stocks. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll update you on the progress the western bean cutworm has made east of the Mississippi River. It may be a new insect pest corn farmers will have to watch for next season. That all happens on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at 508.5, up a penny for the day. March contract at $5.25. Settlement price there up a half cent. December corn futures at 332.5 were up 5.5. The March contract at 344.5 up 5. And the May corn at $3.52. The settlement price up 5.5 cents. July futures at 357.5 were up 6 cents for the day. December futures in the corn pit for next year at 338.25, up 3.5 on the Friday afternoon. November beans 635.5 up 7.75. January futures at 649 up 7.25. And the March contract 8 cents higher today. No, at 658. November beans at $6.80, and they were up 4.5 for the day. December bean meal futures 187.70 up 160. December bean oil, $27.50, up 46 on the afternoon. At the Mercantile Exchange, nearby November feeder cattle, that's your new lead option, at $103.57.5, down $1.42.5 from yesterday. The October live cattle at $89.82.5, down $1.27.5. And the December futures off $1.37.5 at $89.27.5, 100 weight. December lean hogs at $64.60 were 12.5 cents higher. Taking a look at some of the outside markets, December crude oil futures at $61. They're up at 44 cents higher, actually at $60.36. And they're up at $44.44 for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average now down just about 71 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened with the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, as we take a look at these numbers, especially from the Chicago Board of Trade corn pit, futures look pretty bright there this week. Started out, and they put in a new low, at least for a week, lower than last week, and put in a higher high early in the week, and they managed to close higher on what would appear to be a pretty decisive day in the trade to the upside. Tell me about this, please.
Well, that, and we've got that weekly move from 2004 in the front-end corn of about 335.25, and back in December of 2004, I think it was either November or December in the month, but these DSO4 futures, Todd, were able to get up to around that 341, 341.5 level. So the trade seemed like in Chicago today it wanted to try and test some of those levels and get up into that what some would say is thin air territory on very overbought conditions. Wheat didn't cooperate as much as it could have, and the spreading from what Chicago told us this afternoon in the wheat corn spreading was very, very heavy. That was probably the heaviest thing that they had to remark about today was the wheat corn spread. The rest of the volume, they said it was pretty light.
And corn trying to make that way up to that 341. I think it's 341.25 maybe. I don't recall. Somewhere in that
right.
range. Only making it to 334. That was the overnight high, actually, earlier in the week, and managed to get back up to that range today for the day trade. How important is it to get there on the day trade as opposed to the overnight trade? Or does it really make much difference?
We still think it's pretty important because we haven't been able. We track all sessions and electronic and side-by-side on the charts, and we still feel like that the side-by-side and the night sessions are a little bit too choppy and a little bit too hard technically to make heads or tails of. So we kind of like the day session more. Obviously, we have to be careful because the Asian traders do like to come in on the overnight. But the issue with the corn market going into the end of the week really does boil down to the weather at this stage. It's been an issue all week long, and the trade's very, very well aware of that. Indiana is 37% versus 60. Iowa's at 48 versus 57. Michigan's almost 30 points behind. Nebraska was 20 points behind on Monday. Ohio almost 30 points, and Wisconsin almost 20 points. So if we made 12% progress from this Monday's numbers from versus last week, we probably only did about half that, 5 or 6 percentage points is what we're probably looking for on Monday's report. And the trade is very well aware of the fact that this is an issue that could create more disappearance, more harvest losses, more lodging, and that may have to be adjusted for in the USDA report in November. So they're very, very sensitive to that. There's a lot of fear up in Chicago given the fact that we have had such a nice run, and just a week ago everybody was feeling very, very good about this run. But at the end of this week, the biggest thing that I can say that's different versus the conference calls at the end of the day is that they're very, very fearful right now that this market is running out of gas, and we'll just have to watch.
Running out of gas, but if the corn hybrids start to roll over and go down, and this is where farmers will be paying, be glad they paid the money, I suppose, if that standability stays with them as the rains fall and it's cold and we move into the month of November. Harvest hasn't taken place, not a lot of harvest anyway, in the month of November for many years now.
No, and it gets back to the point of this morning's comments when we talked about the high prices we're dealing with in the cash market. It's not just a futures market rally. We've got an unbelievably good cash price right now. And there is getting to the point where when you go above 325 lead month corn, you're in the top 5 or 7 percentile in the last 25 or 30 years. That doesn't mean we can't go to $4 this year given the right circumstances, but as we often like to say, you got to run on all eights. And at some point in time, at these price levels, you begin to get as much downside exposure as you do upside exposure, and that's where the producer really has to go back and the analyst also go back and wipe off the cobwebs and say, okay, what did I do wrong in 95, 96?
And what are you finding that you did wrong in 95 and 96, especially since you're talking about this market, maybe at least those traders talking about running out of gas to the upside?
Well, and it would be nice if it would for the short term. I mean, I think our bottom line point is we want to get a little bit longer than we are right now. We would love to have a correction because then you wouldn't shock the demand as much. That's point number one. Point number two was that I remember vividly we bought too much in these 06 calls. That was the new crop. That would be DSO 7 this year. Keep your reownership in the front end. And, the third point and the biggest one of all is don't put everything in the bin and just think you're going to be able to market very easily as the market goes higher into the summer, because if we do get a downdraft of 35 or 50 cents, we will be stuck psychologically waiting for that second move back up. And that's no way to play defense at these prices. This is too good a prices to have to play that kind of defense on.
I have another question. I frankly don't know the answer to this, and I don't know whether you will or not. In past years, we've been able to track how much corn producers really have sold because of the LDP, because we could get those numbers out of FSA. Is there a way to get those now? I mean, because I'm thinking that when we checked and talked with some grain elevators, they seem to have bought a lot of corn. Maybe I've heard as high as 70% across the scale this fall has been sold to them. And whether how much of that was sold across the scale in pre-sales, I don't know. But it seems to me that we might want to know how much corn has been taken out of the farmers' hands at this point.
No, I think the grain stocks report is probably the only way you can use that, and that's quarterly, and that's very hard to use. And like you said, without the LDP and the help of the weekly updates, it's very hard to get that number. And I think you bring up a really good point, Todd, about the sales and the earlier sales made in 06. We get stronger and stronger and stronger indication, and a lot of the listeners in Will Radio land are saying this to us, that it's always the same way, that we end up doing the opposite of what we did the previous year, and it's going to be one of those years where it's going to be very hard to fight not holding on too long because you let go too quickly this year. You sold too much too early, so you're going to do the exact opposite this next year and end up doing the exact wrong thing again. That's why we're pounding this drum so hard. It's not because we want people to buy options. It's because we feel like it's the right thing to do, and we really don't want to buy a bunch of March and July and May options because we feel like that's the right thing to do it loan price corn, but when you get them up this high, that's the right thing to do.
So you're just saying sell. How much?
I'm saying sell, but I'm saying you have to be there if the market goes up that next leg. If you do run this on all eight, say the Chinese drought and the wheat plains last, and you take the wheat ending stocks down another level, all the ethanol plants come online at the same time we pollinate corn next summer, and you have a hit in the pollination phase. The market's never dealt with this kind of a market before because in 95, 96, you didn't have the funds, and you didn't have corn trading like a crude oil or energy market.
What's your best set of advice then?
Well, in the corn, I'm saying replace that unlimited risk in the bin with known cost risk in the bin. Spread your options out between March, May, and July.
So go ahead and make the cash sales.
Make the cash sales, but come back in immediately and get some reownership on. That's what we're fighting and struggling with the most is that farmers said 2 weeks ago, well, I'm going to go ahead after the report. We said, okay, we made all these sales before the report. Now we got to buy some of this back. We're still struggling with the idea of buying some of that back, and this is not the market to be doing that because the price is too high that you're getting your cash corn price. Yeah, the calls are a lot more expensive, but so is your net selling price too.
Go back and explain. So let me double check.
Well, your calls have gone up a dime. Your calls have gone up a dime since the report,
yeah.
Or 15 cents. But you know what? Your cash price has gone up 30 cents.
Well, and are you saying go ahead and buy those? Or are you saying?
Yes, I'm saying replace the unlimited risk in the bin with calls with known risk.
Okay, but I guess what I was thinking was that I heard you earlier say, well, I want to wait. And on a correction, go ahead.
No. The producers are saying that. The producers are saying, I want to sell it, but I want to wait and buy on right now. We're saying, no, get that first 25% done right now.
Oh, gotcha. So, yeah. So you're going to go ahead and you want them to sell everything and then make sure they have 25% of it covered.
That's
and do
right.
It, and do
and,
it now.
And then do another 25% next month. If we get a correction, that's great. If we don't, still have it on by the end of next month.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was confused. But on the beans, I think the trade this week has told the market. And when we got this very strongly from the floor trader that we talked to on the conference call just a few minutes ago, that South American hedge pressure is very heavy. Both Argentine and Brazilian commercials were selling Board of Trade prices for May and July. You know, we think this market this week has assured us of 100 million metric ton Brazil-Argentina combined production, that the Brazilians are going to come in and give us 53 to 55 million metric ton crop if the weather's on their side. So that this market in the beans, by Halloween, next week, we want to be at some 07 sales, probably 20%, especially if we're scooting up against that $7 level. So Novo 7 beans got the 685 today.
Oh, yeah. So we gained 29 in the no nearby this week and 22 in the 07. And you want to really get a lot of next year's crop sold because you think she's going to tank.
20% we want to do next week, Todd, because we think that the bottom line is the Argentines and the Brazilians are going to be attracted by these prices. And we think the trade in Chicago is already pricing in to some degree lower acres here in the United States by being at these price levels. You've got 25-year record, 25-year lows in coarse grains and wheat ending stocks in the world, but you've got near 25-year highs in oil seeds.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate your patience with me.
Not a problem, Mike.
Okay.
It's our job. Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Kansas City. Either I was patient or I just didn't know what I was talking about. One of the two. You can take the guess.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the ag weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name is Steve Hilberg. A flood watch in effect, by the way, for portions of southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana and also east central Indiana tonight.
In agricultural news, trade talks between the U.S. and South Korea have bogged down over a disagreement about U.S. tariffs on Korean textiles and Korean tariffs on U.S. farm products. The two sides have a self-imposed deadline of reaching a trade deal by next March, but negotiators were unable to even establish a basic framework agreement that would guide them during their fifth round of talks scheduled for December.
Bunge North America agreed yesterday to pay $13.9 million in a pollution settlement with the federal government. The settlement requires Bunge to clean up emissions at 11 soybean processing plants and one corn plant in 8 states. Among the plants are 2 in Illinois, a soybean plant in Cairo, and a corn plant in Danville. The decree is subject to a 30-day public comment period and judicial approval. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says he does not support legislation to ban horse slaughter in the U.S., and he says he's working to prevent the proposal from being tacked onto legislation during the lame duck session.
Today I'm sending a letter to the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee asking him to block any effort to attach measures related to the prevention of horse slaughtering in the United States, because I think it'll be a first step towards other limits of slaughtering of other domestic animals in the United States and will change the face of agriculture.
The horse slaughter ban passed earlier in the House despite a 37-3 vote in the Agriculture Committee recommending failure of the bill. A report from Global Subsidies Initiative in Geneva, Switzerland, says tax breaks for U.S. ethanol and biodiesel could cost taxpayers more than $5 million a year. Officials at the Renewable Fuels Association are critical of the study, saying it does not take into account the economic benefits of biofuels. RFA spokesperson Matt Hartwig says operation and construction of ethanol plants contributed about $2 billion in federal taxes in 2005. Ford Motor Company has pledged $1 million to the FFA for scholarships to colleges and universities and support of FFA programming. Ford spokesperson Ben Poor.
What they can do is go to their local dealership and ask for a scholarship application. They'll then have to fill that out, get an endorsement from their local FFA chapter. That's then sent up through the national chapter, and then we elect the winners from around the nation. So it's really pretty easy. Any local Ford dealer can help them out as long as the student is a member of FFA.
Ford will offer $701,000 scholarships with a balance of the money to support the FFA's 80th National Convention next year in Indianapolis and the FFA Washington, D.C. Leadership Conference. The International Grains Council has cut its estimates of world wheat and corn production and ending stocks. The IGC puts corn production at 690 million metric tons, 6 million fewer than last month, while corn ending stocks are seen at 94 million metric tons, also 6 million less than a month ago. World wheat production was cut 3 million metric tons from last month, down to 585 million metric tons. ICG lowered Australia's wheat crop to 10 million metric tons. Wheat ending stocks were dropped 2 million metric tons to 114 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. Well, up next, the western bean cutworm is working its way into the eastern corn belt. I'll update you on the moss spread and how farmers in the Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio should assess its potential to damage a crop. The western bean cutworm is a native insect pest of North America. Its historical origins lie in the Great Plains of the U.S., but it has slowly been trekking eastward. The western bean cutworm showed up in Illinois for the first time in the year 2004, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
In 2004, we began to see some of the very first captures of the western bean cutworm moth in Illinois, and we have continued to monitor its spread with the use of pheromone traps, a network of individuals monitoring these traps from the private sector as well as extension personnel. Suggests that this insect continues its move eastward, and certainly in the 2006 growing season, we began to see some captures in the minor to moderate range, even into areas of central Illinois. As you look across Indiana and its most eastward expansion into western Ohio, moth captures are beginning to show up in those states as well.
Well, despite its name, the western bean cutworm is an insect pest of corn. It's also difficult to manage, says U of I's Mike Gray. Rescue treatments can be applied, but this requires scouting a cornfield. Not a happy circumstance if you've ever been in one during the heat of a hot summer day.
Rescue treatments are an option, but again, it does require scouting of fields and applying the rescue treatments in a timely fashion before the western bean cutworm larvae are able to penetrate into ear tissue. They do have the nasty habit of, in some cases, being quite numerous within an ear, and they don't really seem to display too much cannibalistic behavior like corn earworms. So it's not uncommon to find several western bean cutworms causing problems by feeding on the developing kernels.
The injury this bug inflicts can run from one end of the ear to the other. Gray says there are many insecticides labeled for treatment of the western bean cutworm in corn, and even a transgenic option.
Many of the transgenic hybrids, but in particular the Herculex hybrids, are probably going to be very attractive when it comes to the management of western bean cutworms, because all indications suggest that they work quite well against this particular insect pest.
You can read more from the University of Illinois entomologist on the western bean cutworm in the 2006 archives of the Bulletin. The online address is www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Joining us on this Friday afternoon for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Bruce, of course, the general manager of the Co-op 7 East Central Illinois locations. I want to hear a little bit about how much grain you have purchased, both over the scale and pre-purchased for corn, coming into this fall season.
We started off with a relatively large harvest book on. It was put on early in the that springtime rally. Then the door slammed shut, and we were buying absolutely nothing in there. Market prices fell. Flat prices were down around $2. And I think the market's attitude was, you know, going into fall, hey, we're going to buy some corn cheap. They can't put it all away. As we progressed, harvest drug out, and it came more of a, oh my gosh, they can put the crop away. And boom, we were off to the races. The interesting thing I've seen this last week or so with the with just really huge cash movement as we have scale-up sellers into this thing, is that the basis has hung in there or even gotten better, which is amazing to see. You know, board and basis improving right as you're going through the tail end of harvest.
It was a pretty interesting week for the Board of Trade. Will basis track if it continues to go up next week?
I think, well, it's hard to tell. To me, basis is one of the things that I'm going to be looking at as a key indicator on this market. The fact that the basis and the spreads reacted first and then the board took off, technically, we've been oversold on this thing a couple times, or overbought on this market a couple times, mm-hmm. but it's not reacting to it. I would be a little bit nervous, flat price, if the basis starts to break back and say that the market, because that would indicate to me that the cash side of the market's got its belly full, which so far they haven't.
And then as we took a look at some of the basis numbers, in fact, it was said that soybeans on the river were really in demand last night and the day before. Did you see that?
Yes, the bean harvest being further along, more of that, you know, the dispositions have been made, the crops been put away. We've seen the processors more aggressive on buying grain. River basis has been improving. Barge freight, especially if you get to the areas, oh, say St. Louis and south, where harvest is wrapped up, has been coming down. So that's really been popping those basis levels. Mid-Miss and Illinois River freight has been steady, but out there trying to generate some cash movement on beans. And, you know, it's been getting it, and the market's been eating it up.
Time to wrap it up. What are your bids for the day?
We are at 320 on corn for Paxton and 623 on beans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
And that is Bruce Bostert. He's at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A millionaire campaign contributor has pleaded guilty to mail fraud and money laundering in a federal investigation of payoffs and kickbacks in state government. Stuart Levine had been indicted for masterminding corruption on two big money state panels, the Illinois Health Facilities Planning Board and the Illinois State Teachers Retirement System. Levine initially pleaded not guilty but changed that plea today. The governor's office is defending the real estate deals that Illinois' First Lady Patricia Blagojevich has had with the woman whose company has had a no-bid state contract. The deals involve the owner of KK Bioscience, a urinalysis company that's conducted drug testing for the State Department of Children and Family Services. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says he's happy that Amtrak and Canadian National Railway have reached an agreement that will allow Amtrak to expand its service in Illinois. Durbin says Canadian National has agreed to go ahead with plans to grant Amtrak access to its tracks along routes that begin in Chicago and end in St. Louis and Carbondale. The expansion is needed to meet growing ridership demand, and it starts next week. But the Illinois Democrat says rail officials will reevaluate the situation in a year to see if the Amtrak trains are interfering with freight traffic. Chicago-based Exelon posted a loss in the latest quarter on slightly weaker sales and a $776 million impairment charge to the company's ComEd unit. Exelon today reported a loss of $44 million, or 7 cents a share. A second supercenter-type grocery and discount store will come to Urbana's southeast side. Meijer plans to join Walmart on that side of town in 2008. It recently decided to move ahead with plans to develop land at Philo and Windsor Roads, land that it's owned for more than 10 years. Spokeswoman Stacy Beeler says based on the success of Meijer's Champaign location and its partnership with the community, the timing was right to open the Urbana store. The University of Illinois has put together a response plan to any potential outbreak of avian flu. It's also having put together a list of common hygiene tips for students, faculty, and staff to help curb the spread of any flu virus. The Urbana campus's Director of Emergency Planning says the action plan is the result of collaboration between the Chancellor's Office and several health experts and groups. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. We're joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's a little cool, a lot wet out there, and maybe we'll get better over the weekend.
Yeah, it looks like we will. And actually, the wetness is really, for the last 24 hours, been mostly over the southern or southeastern half of the state. Northern Illinois and northwestern Illinois haven't seen much precipitation other than some drizzle the last 24 hours or so. They did get some yesterday, but we've got some pretty good rains going down with the main core of it right along I-70 down in Illinois and Indiana, and basically not much north of a line from old Hoopston to Alton, Illinois. Basically north of that line, there's not much, but a lot of rain to the south, so that'll be gradually moving out the rest of the afternoon and tonight.
And then after we get past that, what can we see for the rest of the weekend?
Well, it looks like a pretty good cold front will sweep through here during the day, beginning tonight, and that'll help clear things out. And I think we're going to actually have a pretty good weekend. It'll be rather windy tomorrow, it looks like, with a very strong low winding up over Lake Superior, a low that's producing our rain now. So I'll have some pretty good northwest winds tomorrow, which I'm not sure that would be a problem for field work, but it could be. And then pretty nice weather and much milder on Sunday into Monday. And then as we get toward Halloween on Tuesday, another front comes through with maybe a couple of showers. I don't see a lot of rain with that. And it looks to me like right now, most of the week, next week, is probably going to be dry. And with the winds over the weekend, I think things may dry out nicely. So those that need to still get out in the field should have a pretty good time of it next week.
And we're a little concerned that the folks further to the east in parts of far eastern Indiana, all of Ohio, a good portion, actually, of the southern part of Indiana as well, are having a tough time getting that crop out. How long will they have to wait to dry out?
Well, it's going to, obviously, it's going to move out of there somewhat later than it will here. And then the rain on, with this front on Tuesday, it actually looks like southern Illinois, or rather southern Indiana and southwestern Ohio could pick up a little bit more rain than we will here as moisture starts to return there. So that could be a delay on Tuesday. After Tuesday, I think probably things will tend to dry out until maybe Friday, when another low coming up to the southeast could push rain back as far north as southern Indiana and most of Ohio. So Indiana and Ohio are going to have a tough time of it next week. They'll get a couple of good days, but it looks like they may get some significant rain Tuesday and then maybe again Thursday or Friday.
Steve, thanks for being along for the ride.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. Our guest, Jerry Golke. Our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Commodity Week airs at 11:30 Central Time. It'll be posted to the website at WILLAG.org by just about 6 o'clock Central Time this evening. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.